Well, hello everybody, and this is our fifth program for the second initiation compilations. Not exactly sure how many pages we have left, quite a few really, I think. Seems to be covered up at the moment, but we're working with quite a number of compilations, and we're going through the books in alphabetical order. So here is a statement about the second initiation and the second aspect of the soul. I suppose that has a lot to do with the love petals. At the second initiation, this great presence, this angel of the presence, is seen as a duality. At the first initiation, it's seen not as a duality, but as a single factor of light and mind. But now another aspect shines forth before the initiate. He becomes aware of this radiant life established on the higher mental plane, who is identified with himself. Notice that, because this is the capacity which the solar angel projecting itself as the angel of the presence has, the ability to identify with that projection of the monad that we know as ourself. So this radiant life who is identified with himself is not only intelligence in action, we would call that the third ray, active intelligence, but also love wisdom in origin. So two aspects of divinity shine forth. He merges his consciousness with this life who is underlying his sense of identity on this higher plane and becomes one with it. So that on the physical plane, through the medium of that personal self, the soul and incarnation through the vehicles, that life angel of the presence is seen as intelligent love expressing itself. And this is, I think, very much a Venus experience, because Venus, we know and understand with its fifth ray soul and its sort of sixth ray, second ray monad, is love and mind, or mind and love. Okay. So progressively, we meet the fuller expression of the angel of the presence through the first three initiations and finally the fourth, after which it its support of our consciousness and our development ends, because we have absorbed enough from it to support our own ongoing progress. All right, we'll go on. What is realized here at the second initiation? At the second initiation, the part to play, the part his egoic group plays in the general scheme, is shown to him, and this would be determined by the soul ray, And still it would be on the higher mental plane. This group is found on the higher mental plane. It's not the same as the ashramic presence, which is most likely and in most cases now found on the Buddhic plane ever since approximately 1925. He becomes more aware of the different group units with whom he is intrinsically associated, and this may show itself on the physical plane. Okay, PHY. Well, I think I need something that will show me physical plane. Okay, so PHP. We'll call it that way. PHP. Okay. And I think some of us may be have this experience that at a certain point in our life, we really begin to meet those with whom we share the soul ray and the general purpose, which is guided by certain ashrams to which we are gravitating. In the case of the Alice Bailey books, pretty much the ashram of Master D.K. subsumed as it is in the ashram of Master K.H. And others are there too for training purposes, even though eventually they will belong to the ashram of a master on a different race, such as Master Moria, let us say. He realizes who they are in their personalities. He meets them and recognizes them, right? He meets and recognizes them, if they are in incarnation, and he sees somewhat what are the karmic relations between groups, maybe on his own ray, units within the various groups, and himself. So the emergence of the understanding of karmic relations. He is given an insight into the specific group purpose and its relation to other groups. So let's just say an understanding of the, I'll call it the interaction of the ashrams. Right. A-S-H, ashrams. He can now work with added assurance. We're talking about when the second initiation takes place, and his intercourse with people on the physical plane becomes more certain. So there is, we have this mental illumination and spiritual intelligence. Both are growing, and thus he works. And thus he works with in a greater light. He can both aid them and himself in adjusting karma, and he is motivated to work out the karma that he understands exists, and therefore bring about a more rapid approach to the final liberation, whatever that is, at first, the fourth degree. Fourth degree? Right. Group relations are consolidated. We see that pretty much, in the meditations that Master D.K. gave to his group. The first two meditations are all about the consolidation of group relations and the training of the group astral body and the harmonization of the group units with each other. So group relations are consolidated and the plans and purposes can be furthered more intelligently. The second initiation is definitely an initiation of intelligence. The second initiation, an initiation of intelligence. And we know that the throat center is stimulated at this initiation with its relationship to mind, even though there is that transference going on between the solar plexus and the heart. As this consolidation of group relations proceeds, so this is pretty much the FC degree in Masonry. D.K. talks about these. He does at least reveal the names. It's a degree in which brotherhood is emphasized, and it's called the fellow craft, and one works together with one's related group units for the welfare of the whole. So it's the second degree. The second degree in Blue Lodge Masonry is pretty much the second degree of the threshold, where we become a probationary initiate of the second degree. So as this consolidation a group relations proceeds, and can we say perhaps it proceeds under Jupiter, one of the planets that makes whole and which is an active player in the second degree. It produces on the physical plane that concerted action and that wise unity and purpose which results in the materialization of the higher ideals. When we're dealing with the astral body and its elevation, we're still dealing with ideals rather than ideas, and Jupiter has about it much of the seventh ray. Jupiter and the seventh ray are involved in this consolidation and precipitation. And the adaptation of force in the wise furthering of the ends of evolution, and this adaptation is possible because of increasing, or let's even say rapidly increasing, spiritual intelligence. So this gives an idea of gains that can be expected, and realizations which arise as the second degree is taken. You know, always there is a wider recognition of groups in which one is participating but did not realize it before. So we may face ourselves as an ego on the higher mental plane who is largely active intelligence at the first degree, but then the egoic group is revealed, and larger groups are revealed as we go along. You know, eventually there are seven great groups on the monadic plane, to one of which we belong, and eventually three still greater groups on the logoic plane, to one of which we belong, and these will be revealed at the still higher initiations. Okay. Now, what about, you know, this is going through the process. I have written on these things, and they appear in Makara, and I've offered written commentary rather than spoken commentary, actually quite a while ago. So pretty much the whole book, Initiation, Human and Solar, is commented upon in a written manner. Now, we know that in the initiation ceremony, the giving of certain occult words is part of the process. The words given at the first, second, and third initiations, and they all are sequential and relate to the rising planes as we would expect at the first initiation, which is dealing with the etheric physical vehicle and is Lemurian in nature, at least symbolically. At the first initiation is given the word for the physical plane, and I assume that, you know, involves the etheric plane. At the second initiation is given the word for the astral plane, and at the third initiation is given the word for the lower mental plane. I suppose at the fourth initiation is given the word for the higher mental plane, which allows the dissolving of the causal body and the fixation of the consciousness onto the Buddhic plane. And these words control certain lives on each of the planes indicated. These words control certain lives on the planes indicated. Probably, you know, it's possible not to remember these impartations, especially at the first and second degree, and by the third degree, we're supposed to remember, but from some of the things that have been said, it looks like it's even possible not to remember, such as the condition of the brain cells and their retentive capacity. You know, we recall, as we read of FCD, freedom from ties, chelaship, and detachment, and that was you know, Roberto Saggioli, that there was a very important interview, probably related, you know, to his possibilities as a developing world savior with Master Kutumi, but the Tibetan had to, in a way, refresh his memory and go through some of the exactitude of that which occurred. So even though there are generalities that we can speak of regarding certain tendencies to remember or not remember, these things are rules which may not apply to everybody at all times. All right, so the secret of the sea, of the ocean, is unfolded at the second initiation. So many of these internal recognitions exist within us on the inner planes, but we have a tough time, I think, bringing them through onto the outer plane or into the brain consciousness. And we have to get better and better at doing that. At the second initiation, the secret of the sea, you know, we have the desert, the sea, and we have the fires across the desert, over all the seas and through the fires, which separate him from the veiled and hidden door. So the secret of the seas is unfolded to him, and through this revelation, two subjects of profound interest become clarified to his inner vision within the causal body, which at first is the chamber of initiation. And they are the mystery of the astral light, and presumably one can learn to read in this light if one follows the necessary developmental process. Interesting, it's part of it is related to vegetarianism, and the second kingdom is the vegetable kingdom, so concentration upon that kingdom will, for food source, will help to open up some of the mysteries of the astral light and some of the mysteries of the Akashic record. And then also the law of karma, which I suppose at man's present stage of development has much to do with his emotional orientations. He is, after this, in a position to do two things, without which he cannot work off that which hinders and thus achieve liberation. Notice the emphasis upon work. We work off our karma, and Saturn is involved in the working off of karma. And we have to say Saturn, the planet of work, okay, and of hard labor, so to speak. He can read the Akashic records, at least he can from the inner planes, and ascertain the past, thereby enabling him to work intelligently in the present. We don't blunder on through an incomplete or distorted knowledge of karmic origins. We understand what is necessary, what relationships are necessary, what is to be gained by those relationships, what is to be paid by those relationships. And he can begin to balance his karma. And I think what we're going to see is note how important Libra is in this second initiation. Libra does have associated with it not only the third ray, but I think it's hinted through divine understanding that the second ray is there. You know, if we went to, where would we go? Right. If we went here in the, okay, so I will try to make this a little bigger, quite a bit bigger, really. And I went to the astrology book, and I went to page, let's say, 333. We would see that Libra offers for the initiate divine love, balance attained, divine love, and understanding. So there is the hint, I think, that Libra carries with it second ray potentials and not only first ray potentials. Okay, so he can begin to balance his karma, to work off his obligations, you know. We've done unto others, and sometimes we have to correct it. And the golden rule is Libran: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's found in so many religions. And to understand how karma in the three worlds can be negated. Now, these are often, let's just say, our inner understandings. And they may or may not be consciously transferred to awareness in the physical brain. But increasingly, with sensitization, they are transferred into physical brain awareness. So it's interesting. What's interesting is that these initiations give us far more than that of which we may be aware on the outer planes. Interiorly, they equip us. And bringing through their bestowal is the hard part, and requires sensitization. And then our gifts, as they exist inwardly, will be revealed to us as within our possession. Okay. But that will take the period following the initiation, in which we work these things out and through. And that's why, you know, sometimes people say, well, you take all five initiations at once, but what's missing there is the opportunity to work these things through into expression on the outer plane. So it's most unlikely, at least in consideration of what is offered as the truth by Master DK. Okay. Now let's look at the effect of initiation on the centers. Before initiation, all the centers will be rotating in fourth dimensional order. Now, you know, maybe this means something like the wheel turning upon itself. I guess we would have to see it. But after initiation, they become flaming wheels, seen clairvoyantly and of rare beauty, and eventually turning in all directions simultaneously. So this is, you know, the inner and objective result of the conferral of the necessary energy. We have to work our way into accurate clairvoyance, and along the way, we may have something of that clairvoyance, but is it accurate, and has it been purified? The fire of Kundalini is then awakened, I suppose, as it is for each of the initiations, according to a certain path and intensity. I'll put that in. According to a certain path and intensity. We can't have the full intensity operating at all of the initiations. Oh my goodness, I can't seem to spell that word. And is progressing in the necessary spirals. Now there is a big hint about how Kundalini rises. Okay. In 10, in intensity. The emotional, at the second initiation, there are, we know, emotional centers. If we were to look here on, we see in the emotional body that there are chakras. as well, and they probably underlie and fit within and in general substand the etheric chakras and so forth. It's not that they are necessarily placed elsewhere in space, and that's a big hint too when we think about our planet, our planetary globes and chains. I think the factor of occult superimposition has to be reckoned with. So we don't necessarily have to go out there looking for these areas as if they were spread around in space. It's just that entree into them probably has different vibrational keys. I hope I'm understood in proposing that. At the second initiation, the emotional centers are similarly awakened, and at the third initiation, those on the mental plane are touched, and these are the centers on the lower mental plane. The initiate can then stand in the presence of the great king, the one initiator, though not in the fullness of that presence, but in the presence as mediated through the symbol of the five-pointed star. FEPS, I think that's a good one. And we'll do it this way, FEPS, five-pointed star. Later the eye, and then later face-to-face. So obviously there's an ongoing, there is an ongoing intensification of that presence with each succeeding initiation, especially from the third to the fifth initiations. Now, at the sixth initiation, we're told, you know, one of those really obscure and arcane references, that another being, no doubt an emanation of the planetary logos, but yet another being that is not Sanat Kumara is the initiator. And then at the seventh, it's the planetary logos himself in fullness, I suppose, who is the initiator. As far as the eighth and ninth, it is not particularly given. Okay. So I think where we are, we're in letters on occult meditation here. We're moving on alphabetically through the different books. But what we're supposed to do with this kind of topical study is to be stimulated by a juxtaposition which is different from the horizontal reading of the text as it is normally presented, and then maybe new ideas flash forth. And in the accumulation of these ideas and their interrelationship and their being made into a wholeness under Jupiter, we have that quality of the divine pattern, the second ray, the ray of the divine pattern. We see it all with meticulous entirety as properly interrelated in the light of pure reason from the Buddhic plane. All right, here we are, sort of onward, you know. I'm just really so interested here in why I don't see anything when it comes to what's down on this level. Maybe I just will not. But somehow, maybe if I do this, and I'll collapse the ribbon. No, that's not going to do any good. So I better go back to collapsing the ribbon and, oops, that's not going to be very good. I have to come back to, let's pause just for a moment here. Well, I will figure it out before long, but not at this moment. Okay, so now we're dealing with the rays, which are upon which initiations are taken. I think this is very interesting, though the material is a little bit contradictory from time to time. Those who are preparing for the first and second initiations, there's a transference of people from one ray to another. It is only an apparent transference, even though it entails passing into the group of a different master. I mean, and this takes place after the second initiation. And maybe we should look at this. It's on page 267 of initiation, excuse me, of the Letters on Occult Meditation. And in order to say it, so let's look at this. There are groups formed around a master and are enclosed in his aura and are part of his consciousness, and they include people whose egoic ray is the same as his, or whose monadic ray is the same as his. And is it the same as his soul ray or as his monadic ray? So this is really interesting. This means two types of people are concerned: those who are preparing for the first and second initiation, taken on the ray of the ego. And this is what's missing from this other reference. And those who are preparing for the next two initiations, three and four, I guess, which are taken on the ray of the monad. And you have here the cause of transference of people from one ray to another. It's only an apparent transference, even though it entails passing into the group of a different master. And this movement onto the monadic ray, or into an ashram where your monadic ray is somehow emphasized, that takes place, he says, after the third initiation. But elsewhere, he tells us that all three of the first initiations, all three preliminary initiations, one, two, and three, are taken upon the ray of the ego. And really, the ray of the ego remains very strong all the way, I think, even up to the fifth initiation, because the triad is liberated from the triad is liberated from the causal body, but still maintains its particular permanent atom focus, which is basically the same as the ray of the soul. So let's just say the secondary ray of the triad, if I have a secondary soul, the secondary ray of the triad is going to be the second ray, and that second ray will remain even after the causal body is gone. So it's important to read here on page 267, and I think we will have more of that later when we actually get into that particular book. So what I'm going to do here is, yes, so I'm going to elaborate this and keep a more full record of what is actually being said. Now, in general, I think that it's quite safe to say, given this particular statement, that if we've taken the second degree, our monadic ray is now going to be the ray on which we take the next initiation. Now, there's a little, now I think certainly we will take our fourth initiation upon the monadic ray largely. It's then that we have a particularly closer relationship to the monad than we have had before that, because the causal body is going to be out of the way. So, you know, do pay attention here to 267. It's always an area that I have found very, very useful and very indicative, and shows the changes that we may find occurring in our orientation. Now, you know, talk about changes for just a second. When we're working with the personality and we suddenly find ourselves interested in things that correlate more with our soul, then we can assume that the soul ray is becoming quite prominent. Now, somewhere DK said that we're going to follow, for the last third of our series of lives, we're going to follow professions or ways of expressing in the world that are more correlated with our soul ray than with our personality ray. And people will begin to feel that struggle in a change of life, a change of orientation in the middle of their otherwise quite stable personality life. And it'll mean that the soul ray is becoming prominent. And then they're going to have that tussle, that back and forth between the orientation of the personality ray, which may be well established and quite effective, and the orientation of the soul ray. Well, now we're going to go another step and see something similar. There is a soul ray orientation, but after the second degree, and certainly after the third, the monadic ray is going to exert quite a pull. Remember that the second degree does correlate with the plane of the monad. So we can call the astral plane 6-2, and we can call the monadic plane 2-2-6, and maybe that will tell us something. Okay. Now I'm doing my best to, yes, there we go. All right. My chronometer tells me how close I am to 1 hour, and I don't usually hit it on the head. You know, even 5 minutes more or a couple of minutes less does occur, but I hope it'll still be within range of listenability. So, you know, people who know they have taken the second initiation should be alert to see if there is some kind of change in orientation which contrasts what they know to be their soul ray with what they suspect to be their monadic ray. And oftentimes the change of orientation at first will indicate, let's just say it's what is the ray. If you're a personality and suddenly you have a different kind of orientation on a different ray, maybe it is the soul ray that you weren't sure of before. Or if, you know, you're sure of your soul ray and then suddenly there's a different orientation, maybe it does indicate what the monadic ray is. All right. That's my little attempt to explain these things, and I guess we have to kind of pass through it in order to understand it in a more intimate manner. Here's another statement, that the perception is only phenomenal until the second initiation. Okay, the first group, this is from Letters, Light of the Soul, and Alice Bailey is writing here based upon translations of the Yoga Sutras that DK has provided, of yogins whose perception is only phenomenal, might be regarded as compromising all who are treading the path of discipleship, and covers the time from their entrance upon the probationary path until they have taken the second initiation. So there's a kind of a, with respect to the ashram, a kind of cutoff point there when you take the second initiation. The second group is comprised of those higher disciples, let's call them advanced disciples, who, having controlled and transmuted the entire lower nature, make a contact with their monad, spirit, or Father in heaven, and discern what the monad perceives. Well, this begins somewhat in the period between the second initiation and the third initiation, though it becomes far more conscious after the third initiation and really quite intimate and immediate at the period of the fourth initiation. So there's no question that the second initiation is a high point in a way, and that's why DK was able to say to that student, ISGL, that yes, you're taking the second initiation if you will follow instructions, and therefore we rate you highly. Remember that the second, third, and fourth, according to DK in Initiation Human and Solar, page 84-85, can be taken in the same life or immediately afterwards. And as I said, that's the amazing thing. So here we are, eliminating impure substance. There's a cleansing at the second degree, isn't there? It's baptism in the Jordan, so there's a general cleansing, assimilation, and protection during the initiations. This is Alice Bailey writing, we remember. It should be most carefully borne in mind that this purity, and remember there's purification by water and then by fire, and at the downpouring of the fire at the Pentecost, that was the introduction of group fiery purification, which the Christ sent to overshadow and descend upon his disciples in the upper room, symbolically. This purity concerns the substance out of which each of these vehicles is composed. So we do need to get them vibrating to a higher rate. And as progress goes on, the focus is on subplane after subplane, and the rate of vibration of the vehicle as a whole is elevated. So there has to be the elimination of impure substance or of those atoms and molecules which limit the free expression of spirit, presumably by too low a vibration, as we're told, you know, don't have anything to do with matter of the sixth and seventh subplanes on the astral plane. They don't really belong in your vehicle at all, we're told. So they certainly would limit the free expression of soul spirit, and which confine it to the form, so that it can have neither free ingress or egress. Well, we talk about being able to come and go, and that's a Neptunian astral thing. And pretty much by the time the sixth petal is open, one can come and go. The time the sixth petal of the egoic lotus is open, one can come and go and make way for a higher teacher. Who can teach through one's vehicles. So otherwise, the atoms of lower vibration halt the egress. You cannot come and go. Okay, so we're talking about purity of substance. And, you know, that is pretty much an issue of transmutation. And we have the other factors, transformation and transfiguration, but transmutation deals with the quality of the matter itself. We have assimilation of those atoms and molecules, which will tend to provide a form through which spirit can adequately function. And this is the indrawing of matter of higher vibration on the sound of the Om, or in other ways, and the protection of the purified form from contamination and deterioration. And these are we might call them the rules of right maintenance. And those are given to those who have to use them. And I suppose much frequent use of the Om is prophylactic in that respect. On the path of purification, or of probation, that's another name for the probationary path, this eliminative process is commenced. on the path of discipleship, you know, and what do we want to say, you know, should we say perhaps beginning with accepted discipleship? The rules for the constructive or assimilative process are learnt and on the path of initiation. After the second initiation, the protective maintenance work, we might say, is begun. So we do have to see to the vibratory purity of our vehicles. And I'm sure that as this work goes on, the master will give the necessary hints, or the soul will, so that one can follow these three steps to purify, to draw in matter of the higher substance, higher vibratory possibilities, and then to maintain that high vibration. It's always possible to fall down. That's the problem. And initiates do lower their vibration from time to time and become a lesson unto themselves and to others. Okay, so we're moving on. The soul submerges the astral nature, right, okay, during the second initiation. a very important book here, Telepathy in the Etheric Vehicle. I find, you know, I'm sure we all do, that there are some books in which we have not spent as much time, and this is one for me. There comes a moment during the second initiation when the soul of the initiate sweeps into activity and fundamental force. If I might so use the term, and fundamental force submerges the astral nature, vitalizing and inspiring the astral body, changing temporarily the quality of the astral aura, and establishing a control which will lead finally to the substitution, which I have mentioned above. You know, it's bringing in high atoms of high vibration and ejecting atoms of low vibration, thus giving the internal soul spirit flexibility to enter, withdraw, and enter. This is an aspect of the truth which underlies the doctrine of vicarious atonement, and it's certainly a lot different from the vicarious atonement that we have understood before. You know, there's some, let's just call it some grace in the initiatory process, and it is engineered by the soul, by the descending soul. So new levels of tension are instituted, but the question is, how easily are they maintained? And that's up to the individual after the initiatory process, his work after the initiatory process. There's a lot of stabilization that has to occur, at least in the initiatory process itself, in the moments of high contact. We are given the vision of what it can be like. We're raised to a point of higher vision, and then maybe we settle back into the condition that we've been sustaining, but we've never internally forgotten that elevation of vision and the new possibilities. And towards it, we work in a Saturn period between initiations. We work on our own to reestablish that which we have been shown, and maybe unconsciously, and maybe there's some deep memory within us of what we have been shown, and that deep memory is very motivating, and unconsciously and by our own efforts, we work towards reestablishing that great sense of vision and the greater capacity which has been given to us for a few short moments. So there comes a moment during the second initiation, maybe it occurs during others as well, when the soul of the initiate sweeps into activity and fundamental force submerges the astral nature, changing it, you know. So I'm going to vitalizing and inspiring the astral body. These initiations are pretty well taken in the causal body, but sometimes we tend later to feel the effects in one body or another, because after all, they're not disconnected on the inner planes. So the way ahead is shown, and we are saved by a higher aspect of ourself, and it's not that we have to beg this aspect to descend. It naturally does and uplifts us. Okay. Now we are, there's apparently only one reference there. I wonder if it is so. Makes me want to, you know, kind of go into the Alice Bailey books here and look at what we might call, okay, I'll just 165. That's way too high. 165. And in telepathy on the etheric vehicle, I'm going to look for second initiation, and there is only one reference, so that must be what it is. Okay. Now, moving on. This is the most interesting section here. It's in a treatise on cosmic fire and talks about the different kinds of forces that we can find associated with the different logoi. So the effects of the Lords of the Rays in Shambhala, yes, and from a higher perspective within the different planetary logoi who are Ray Lords. And these should be memorized, I think, because they really do tell us something about the names of the Ray Lords. The magical force of the seventh logos is found at the first initiation. So, who is this seventh logos? Is it Uranus from the soul perspective? It's certainly the seventh Ray Lord within Shambhala who's receiving an inflow of force from the sacred logos of the seventh ray in our solar system. Now, notice here the word aggressive, which sounds very Martian. The aggressive fire of the sixth logos is felt at the sixth initiation, and that sounds a lot like Mars and tells us that Mars will be necessarily involved in this initiation, even though with Pluto and Vulcan, I believe, even though the planets usually considered in relation to this initiation are Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. The illuminating light of the fifth logos is felt at the third initiation, and this is the, we might call it in a way, the cause of transfiguration, and the reason why the light sublime begins to come into focus. And we might say, you know, okay, is this Venus? We might say. The harmonizing life of the fourth logos is felt at the fourth initiation. Interesting that the heart is involved there as the major chakra, and the idea of the cross and the harmonizing of the human and Deva kingdom is occurring on the Buddhic plane as that plane begins to be accessed at the fourth initiation. Remember the word Buddhi, it involves Mercury, which is the fourth ray soul. So is this Mercurian Logos, and the, of course, the Ray Lord that is in Shambhala associated as the receiver of that type of force. Remember that planets do give off more than one ray, and it just depends on when in the development of the initiatory development of the human being. The timing will determine which ray is received. I mean, Mercury gives off higher rays as well, and so does Venus. But maybe at this point, we're still pretty much dealing with the soul ray of the advancing initiate. The blending power of the third logos is felt at the fifth initiation. That's kind of interesting, the word blending. But then think about the ways in this map here. Maybe if I can go sort of over here to, there it is, how the, if we look at it, under the Mahachohan and under the Venetian master, all of these are blended together, and 4, 5, 6, and 7 are considered to be aspects of the third ray, and these outposts of the ray are related to still higher ray lords, to the ray lords in Shambhala, and also to the third ray of active intelligence here. So, yes, the blending power of the third logos. But who is that? Is that Saturn? Because, you know, once you begin to become aware that there are soul rays of different planetary logoi, and there are monadic rays and personality rays, you begin to wonder which you should use. So can we really be talking of Saturn? And it's probable third ray soul, maybe. And here is the unifying heat of the second logos. Are we talking about Jupiter? Is felt at the sixth initiation. Certainly, Jupiter is interesting because it's a planet of travel and expansion. And that's exactly what begins to happen here at the sixth initiation, and it blends into a unity many different factors. It unifies, we might say. Jupiter unifies many factors into a oneness, and it has probably a second ray soul, whatever its monadic ray might be, maybe along the seventh ray line, or, well, there's some mysteries about the rays as we ascend. But here is the dynamic electricity of the first logos is felt at the seventh initiation. But now the word electricity, this word suggests Uranus. It is the most electrical of the planets, and it does have the first ray monad. And certainly a monadic quality of these sources would be received in relation to such a high initiation as the seventh. Seventh initiation. So maybe, and maybe even when we look at the sixth initiation, could be Neptune. You know, Neptune could be involved here. Neptune with its second ray monad could be involved. Neptune definitely has the second ray monad, and then the Saturn has the third ray monad. Saturn has the third ray I'm going to make that third ray monad. And so maybe the third ray soul and the third ray monad as well. Third ray monad. I think we're okay. Okay. So maybe the synthesizing planets are involved with the monadic ray, are involved with the MDC with the monadic ray for the fifth, sixth, and seventh initiations. But it still has you wondering what will be considered then the magical force of the seventh logos, because Uranus is ray one from monadic consideration, but ray seven from a soul consideration. So does it appear twice? Does Uranus appear twice? Well, we begin to see that that this is not maybe quite so straightforward as it looks. So third ray monad. Okay. I'm looking here. Third ray and a TDR. That's it. Okay. Third ray monad. There we go. Okay. Well, what is there is no non-sacred planet of the seventh ray. There is no non-sacred planet of the fifth ray. So we may be forced to use one planet twice, Uranus once in its soul ray perspective, and then Uranus in its monadic ray perspective. But I think what is interesting here is to use these adjectives, magical, aggressive, illuminating, along with the various planetary logoic qualities, harmonizing, blending, although it's hard to think of Saturn as blending, unifying, certainly Jupiter or Neptune would fit there, and dynamic, Uranus certainly fits there. So the adjectives are very important when thinking of the ray source. Okay. Well, hopefully I haven't gotten off into a kind of complexity there that cannot be resolved. I think the adjectives are the important thing, and the kind of energy that comes in at the different initiations, magical, illuminating, magical, aggressive, illuminating, harmonizing, blending, unifying, dynamic. When we're thinking about each of these initiations, this page 433 is an important one. Okay, then that's going to be it. A little bit over, I think. So we'll call this the end of second initiation compilation program number 5. And our day today is the 17th of June. And then beginning of second initiation commentary program number 6. And when that will take place, we don't know, but hopefully it will take place yet today. All right. We have a lot to think about. The important thing is when we're taking an initiation or preparing for it, what is the nature of the force which will be flowing in, and with which ray lord is it associated, and with which greater solar systemic planetary Raylord, is it associated, and why is that the case? Okay, all of these things are factors to be carefully considered. So we'll see you soon, and let's all study hard to assimilate this material and have it come within and actually really begin to make sense, even though, of course, it's a stretch and much of it is beyond us, but still, when we incorporate it, it will go through some interesting internal alchemy, and realization may well result. See you soon. Bye-bye.